Hey everybody, this episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Out of the Park Developments, and you know what? It is now the Steam Summer Sale. One of the biggest and best sales of the year is now on from today through the 4th of July, and Out of the Park Baseball 18 is available for 50% off, as is Franchise Hockey Manager 3. You can now get Out of the Park Baseball 18, the follow-up to the 2016 Metacritic PC Game of the Year, for just $19.99, and you can get Franchise Hockey Manager 3, a fantastic hockey strategy simulator, for just $9.99. There is no time like the present. If you have not already picked up Out of the Park Baseball or Franchise Hockey Manager, now's the time to do it. It's the Steam Summer Sale. Both games are 50% off. You get the award-winning baseball game and the fantastic hockey game. We are really excited for the Steam Summer Sale this year. I mentioned it's between now and the 4th of July. Don't wait any longer. Out of the Park Baseball 18, 50% off. Franchise Hockey Manager 3, 50% off. You can get them on Steam during the Steam Summer Sale. Thanks, everybody, and enjoy the show.
Well, we've got another new sports game to talk about. That's always fun, especially in the first half of the year when they're few and far between. Welcome back to the Press Row Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Weedy, Pasta Padre. In this episode, I'm joined by Rich Grisham and Chris Jardine, a.k.a. Snaggle J. We're going to talk about the Golf Club 2, which just came out earlier this week. We're also going to touch on patch regulations that are already causing problems for third-party games on Nintendo Switch, and we're going to get into this new strategy of selling more expensive special editions of sports games with earlier release dates than their standard edition counterparts. First, though, it's been a while since we discussed just what we've been playing or what we've been spending our time doing if it's not playing games, because sometimes that we don't have as much time as we'd like for that. But Rich Grisham, you're always on top of this, so get us going.
Well, let's see. I just last night finished my first season in Road to the Show. It has been many years since I have completed even one season of Road to the Show. So this is a bit of a moment. I was a switch. Well, I am a switch hitting second baseman that was selected by the Oakland Athletics. Mm-hmm. I finished the year hitting, or I don't have the exact numbers, but very close to, I think it was 293. I know I had 13 homers, and I know I had 47 RBIs. So not a bad year, 293, 13, 47, but not a great year. Mm-hmm. And I was offered a contract at the end of the season to go back to AA as a starter. So that to me doesn't feel very successful from that perspective. All I do is hit. Like, I have it set. I don't do any of the base running. I don't do any of the fielding. All I do is hit. Mm-hmm. I would have gotten through this much sooner, but I think I've talked about it maybe a few episodes ago. Generally, the way that I play the show is on the treadmill. I play a couple of games of my franchise in the player lock and then unlock mode, and then I finish off the workout playing Road to the Show. So I was really only getting in, you know, a few 5 to 15 minute bites, and I haven't been working out as much at home recently because there's a great gym at the place where I work. So I kind of do it less at home these days, the sort of treadmill game. Whenever I am on the treadmill at home, I am playing. So anyway, long story short, a couple weeks ago, because the Mets are just terrible because they're the Mets, I kind of went away from my true 162, and now I've just been focused on the career, which is how I got to this point. I'm a little concerned because I think most people go up the next level. And I'm in spring training the next year, and I've had 3 pinch hit appearances for the big club in spring training. I'm 1 for 3. So that's – but I'm concerned. Like, I don't want to go back to AA. I already spent a whole year there. I want to go to AAA.
Be patient. Now, has the – it's not so much story elements, but has the interactions that they added this year, did that make you more interested in playing for a longer period of time in Road to the Show?
No, but I don't mean that in a cynical way. I'm glad it's there. You know, they're doing something. I was always very deferential. Like, whenever – you know, you could basically be like, whenever you're getting advice from your agent or from your – especially from your manager, you can either be like, sure thing, Skip. you got it. Or you can be like, yeah, yeah, whatever, old man, go away. I got it. I got it. You know, you can have like an attitude or not. And I was always just very like, okay, yep, got it. Understood.
That's us, right, Rich? That's like an older perspective on these things. Like when they come out with the story modes in NBA 2K, and you're like, I don't relate to these characters because they they do things or say things that just don't, you know, mesh with my sensibilities or whatever it might be. And so when we get these options, I'm always the same way. I'm always picking, like, you know, the most vanilla answer, like the most. I'm like, this is respectable. This is the most respectable answer. You know, I'm being, you know, this is what the most would fit my personality. And sometimes you don't even have those type of options. But I find it funny because we're like not necessarily the target for where some of these stories are going.
So I don't know what's going to happen to me. I mean, I'm not a good hitter. So it's not like I'm going into spring training expecting to hit 420 with three or four homers and 20 at bats. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to go back to double A, and who knows? I think choosing to be a switch hitter has really hurt me, because basically you almost have to double your attributes, you know, one from the left, one from the right. And I've focused a lot more of my attributes to my left-handed hitting side, because that's where you can be more effective, I think, you know, as with the just more right-handers and left-handers out there. So, right. But I don't know, you know, I'm going to keep on doing it. Like it is fun now. I think I'm going to just abandon my 162. I played 162 a couple of years in a row. It's just with the real world Mets being so disappointing, it's not nearly as much fun to play with my fake Mets as it was the last couple of years, when for the first time in a long time they were good.
Yeah, you don't have any Pro Evolution stories to tell us this time, because that's the staple of the Press Row podcast.
Oh no, I know. My time has been limited, and I've focused it mostly in the sports game world, especially on MLB The Show. I've been dabbling on my Xbox One. You know, I have the Game Pass. Yeah. So I played a lot of games on that. I've played through both of the Toy Soldiers games. I'm playing Mad Max right now, which is not a game that I would typically play, but I've heard so many good things about it, and it's part of the package. I'm like, all right, let me try it. And and I've been playing just a few other ones, like Plants vs. Zombies, and which is always fun. And so I have the Pac-Man Museum is on there. So I've been poking around, looking at some of the historic Pac-Man stuff, just a lot of stuff there. But from the sports perspective, it's the show. Like this time of year, there's no basketball. There's no hockey. That's all done. There's no football. There's no soccer. Like baseball is the only thing happening. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of feels like playing my Road to the Show is the right place to be on the console.
Yeah. Chris, welcome back to the show, Snaggle Jay. It's been a while since we've had you on. So what have you been up to lately? What have you been playing?
Well, it's kind of funny. The last time I was on the show was 3 days after I took a Diamond Dynasty hiatus, which I broke last night. It's kind of funny. I got back into some Diamond Dynasty last night, just playing against some members of my Twitch community, just friendly head-to-head games. Was absolutely upset with how the game played online, but that's not the point. Summertime for me is kind of tough. I'm an umpire in real life, so that takes up 3 to 4 of my evenings a week, which would normally be video game time. But I have been playing a lot of MLB The Show franchise. I actually have a community franchise with created players who are sent in by members of my Twitch community, of which friends of the show, Millennium and That Sports Gamer and Uber YouTuber, all have created characters on the franchise. Mm-hmm. Just this past week on Monday night, we won the American League wild card game against Detroit. And then we picked up a game 1 ALDS victory against Cleveland. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
Well done.
It was. We had to claw back. We were three games out of the wild card with 20 games to play, and we had to overtake the Yankees, which we managed to do. So it's been really fun. The guys in the chat really like it, which kind of in turn makes me enjoy it more. Yeah. When it's especially interactive like that, when the guys have a vested interest in, you know, the specific players. But as far as sports games, that's pretty much it. I kind of caught the Battlegrounds bug that's going around. Everyone's playing PlayerUnknown.
I've seen a lot of talk about that. I don't know. I've given up on. I don't think I'll ever enjoy a shooter again.
I picked up the game. I watch a lot of Twitch. You know, it's just something that I always seem to have open, and I watch people stream it. And I didn't really get the whole idea behind Battlegrounds, but you know what? I had some Steam credit. I picked it up. I played it a few times solo. It wasn't bad. But then when I started playing squads with people, and it's kind of fun, and it's exciting, and you can, I'm terrible at it. So, I mean, you know, you can laugh about it, and it's just kind of like, you know, it becomes more, it's kind of the same reason why I enjoy Battlefield. I've played a lot of Battlefield 1 since it came out, but I don't play it solo. I get a group of friends together and we roll as a squad, and it's more of a social event as opposed to a gaming event. And that's kind of what Battlegrounds has become for me. Like, if I can get another person or a couple of people together, that's kind of, so I've kind of caught that bug. So I was hoping the Golf Club 2 was going to fill a sports need, a sports void in my gaming schedule, but so far, not so good.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that now then. Yeah. And it's not because the game is bad, because the game is actually really good. But we're going to explain why we have that sentiment here momentarily. So let me just set it up, because the Golf Club, there may not be a lot of people out there who are too familiar with this, because it's from an independent developer, HB Studios. HB Studios actually had a track record of working on a lot of sports games over the years, many of which were published under the EA Sports label. So they had a lot of experience. This was their first time in 2014 releasing a solo golf game. Now, it's an unlicensed game, so it doesn't have real golfers, doesn't have real courses or real like television presentation or real equipment, things of that nature. But what it does do is gives you a simulation-style experience more so than you would have gotten from the Tiger Woods games or the most recent Rory McIlroy game. But the Golf Club in 2014, and this was a game that was really well-received by people who tried it out. Now, it had its share of issues, most of which being it was really an unfriendly game to people who were unfamiliar with it, who were just getting started. There were no tutorials, there wasn't any way to practice, and the game's very difficult, because like I said, it's a simulation-based game. And also, it was lacking somewhat in content. Didn't have a career mode. Now, it did have some social elements built in, but there wasn't really much of a way to put your work in and get something out of it. They address those issues in the Golf Club too. There's a career mode. There's a new social feature called Societies. There's a few different ways to interact with other people while you're playing. But that also all ties into servers, which have been the biggest issue so far. So let's just talk a little bit about it. Rich has the game, has not been able to play yet. Chris and I have played quite a bit, I think. I know I have. I put up my review on Sporting News on Tuesday. Again, I really like this game. I think they did a lot to make it friendlier as far as having tutorials, having a driving range and a practice green and chipping practice. So they did a good job in that sense, and I think it's a lot easier to recommend to golf fans and to video game golf fans. But we're going to get into some of the issues with the game also, and then just what we thought about it in general. Let's start, Chris. Give me your just kind of overriding thoughts on the Golf Club 2.
I feel like if you look strictly at, remove the server element for right now, it's a fantastic game. It's in every single way that I can fathom at this point better than the original game. You know, the graphics are crisper and more refined and everything is brighter. I just feel the game plays better. You know, the shot stick to me personally, I know I've had people complain to me saying they don't feel the shot stick is as accurate. I actually feel the opposite. I feel like the Golf Club 2, the shot stick is a little tighter than it was in the first game.
Well, do you think we're because there are definitely a lot of different opinions on the mm-hmm. stick, because there's only one way to hit yep. in this game, so you can't use like a button press system. It's all, you can choose either left or right stick, yep. but push down, push up. Yep. And I posted on Twitter on Tuesday, this is my default shot, and it's like curves to the left, because I feel yep. like I'm going straight up and down, and it curves to the left. Is there yep. possibly something to do with, okay, so I think we've all played on PS4, but yep. Is there something to do with the stick calibration, or, you know, an older controller versus a newer controller that's maybe affecting shots? Because I've seen a lot yep. of people have different sense of the response they're getting back from yep. from swings.
And I have seen the same thing you're seeing. I have seen some vocal people who feel as though there is something, and I hate to use this word, but it's the word that I keep getting thrown in my direction, that something is quote-unquote broken, that they don't see an accurate response to how they feel their swing is being inputted. Me, personally, I have not felt that way. I've played probably between 7 to 10 rounds so far, you know, various courses, various, online, offline. I personally have not run into any issues where I'm like, wow, I felt like I hit a better shot than what was represented on the screen. I haven't seen, video clips or any actual evidence other than people saying, I feel like I hit that straight up and down and it's, ducking to the left. So, perhaps it's an issue. I've seen it enough on Twitter and in comments in my stream and other streams that I've watched where I think it's definitely something worth exploring, but I can't say I've personally encountered that issue.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've basically just on my shots off the tee, I add, fade onto it. Yep. So it goes a little, I add that on pretty much every shot off the tee to compensate. Yep. I think I do a better job using that to compensate than consciously trying to push it to the right more, because right. then I end up just slicing and, just a disaster. So I put a little bit of fade on it, and that seems to correct it for me.
Yeah.
So that's just something people might want to try doing. It's funny, because when it does give you the straight up and down feedback, there's something mm-hmm. in your head that just kind of clicks, like, yeah, I did that one perfect, didn't I?
Yep.
Right? You get that feeling where you're like, wow, that one was perfect. But sometimes also I get I think I did that one perfect, and it's just way off.
Yeah.
I don't know. It could just be so sensitive or whatever it might be. I don't know. It's a tough thing to gauge whether that's all in our heads or if it's a equipment issue or if it's a game issue.
Well, and that's the thing is, it's such an accurate representation of real life golf that, like you said, like, I feel like when I hit one perfect, with a wonderful shot and you hit drive it right down the middle, 305, 310, you're like, it's like you did that in real life. Like when you hit one right on the screws and it goes right down the middle and you're like, wow, that actually felt good. Like, I didn't throw my ankle out, or I didn't strain my oblique muscle hitting that ball. Like, I felt like I did it right. It's like, I personally don't have the sample size to say whether there's some tweaks to be done there. But I know in the Golf Club, if I'm not mistaken, in the original game, there were similar, obviously, less loud because there was fewer people playing that game when it came out. Mm-hmm. But there were similar kind of complaints, if I remember correctly. I mean, you're testing my memory from 3 years ago, but I do remember a vocal group that said that the game didn't accurately represent their swing with the original game as well.
Yeah.
So whether that's just a continuing trend, the same group of people, I mean, the game doesn't have, zero flaws. I feel like the bounces you get when the ball hits the rough are a little overdone. That is something that I have sent to the developers and really hope is something that they tweak in a patch. I just feel like the ball bounces out of the rough way too regularly to represent deeper rough. So that's one thing I've noticed. And the putting is still incredibly difficult.
I've actually done better in the putting. Like maybe it's just seeing where I started from and getting to where I am now, where I'm confident really within 12 feet, which is, I don't know if that's impressive in real life, but in the golf club to get within 12 feet and feel like, okay, I've got this. That to me is a big confidence booster for me. And then beyond that, I'm pretty confident that I can get close enough that I'm going to be able to make my second putt.
Yeah.
So I've actually done better with that. And I've improved also on chipping. To me, it's the chipping onto the green that's the most difficult, because you're trying to gauge power based on percentage of how far back your swing basically goes, right? There's no power meter or anything of that nature. So I like take a practice backswing, try to determine, okay, I've probably got to, I start doing math in my head, right? I'm like, okay, I probably got to hit this about 80% power. And then I try to figure out where that is on the backswing. Yeah. And so, when you're dealing in really difficult courses, like I thought I was doing well on the first day I was playing this game. And then I hit a tough course where the greens were fast and there were a lot of hazards, and it just all fell apart.
Hey everybody, Rich Grisham here. We're going to take just a moment to thank our sponsors for this week, HelloFresh. These guys do a fantastic job, and I am now a customer, and you can help the Press Row podcast and have some great meals, and we'll tell you how to do that at the end of this. So real quick, let me tell you what HelloFresh is. They are on a mission to save home cooking because it's just too good to go away. They want to make cooking more fun, so they focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. So they think of themselves as three different kind of companies all at one. Number one, a farm-to-box company, because they want everyone to have access to fresh ingredients that inspire great meals. But they're also a couch-to-kitchen company, because they think the best way to kick those 5 p.m. excuses is by feeling unstoppable in the kitchen. And third, they are a fork-to-feel-good company, because when you cook and eat delicious and healthy meals, you're going to want to keep doing it again and again. And I can vouch for this because HelloFresh sent us a big old box with several meals, and it came in an insulated box, and it had the frozen ice packs in there, which kept everything nice and fresh. And those, by the way, are reusable. So we tossed them into the freezer, and we actually wound up using them when we went to the beach a few days later. They offer different things, a classic box, a veggie box, and a family box. You can order 3, 4, or 5 different meals per week designed for either 2 or 4 people. New recipes are created every week. In 6 easy-to-master steps, they get you chopping, zesting, and cooking like a natural, because most of the recipes take just 30 minutes and require minimal equipment. And this is totally legit. As I mentioned, my wife and my son, he's 9, he was working with her, and they got all the stuff out, and they chopped, and they zested, and they cooked, and they did everything that they had to do. And it was a really, really great meal at the end. And I am now officially a HelloFresh customer. So the way that you can help us out is simple. All you got to do, you got to go to HelloFresh.com and enter the code PRESSROW30 when you subscribe. When you do that, you get $30 off your first week of deliveries. That is a great savings. So HelloFresh.com, enter PRESSROW30 when you subscribe. This is a really good service. It really makes life easier and better. You know, if you want to have a good meal, but you want to prepare it and you want to sort of get everybody in the kitchen, this is a fantastic way to do it. And it's cost effective too. For less than $10 a meal, you're going to have much better dinner than if you were, you know, to do that guilty pleasure, drive on over to that fast food place or order that same pizza that you've had 4 times in the last 8 days. Check out HelloFresh.com and enter the promo code PRESSROW30. Get $30 off your first week of deliveries. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, HelloFresh. Thank you for listening to the Press Row podcast, and enjoy the rest of the show.
Yeah, I had played a few rounds, just on some courses that were kind of carryover courses from TGC1, you know, courses that I kind of knew and was kind of familiar with. And you know, I had a few good rounds. I started with the middle club set, which for people who don't know, there's 3 different club sets in the game. The standard club set has the shortest distance, but has the most forgiveness. The tour set, which I've seen people jump right to the tour set, longest distance, but also has the greatest margin for error. So you got to be pretty perfect. So I started on the middle set. I played a few good rounds, and then we played the St. Andrews created course.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my, it was. Yeah. I think I shot 13 over. I think I three putted probably 10 different holes. It was just, and I'm like, I'm not ready for this at all. Like it's got to practice.
I'll tell you what, like there, I can't remember another game where I've literally, and I put this in my review, I've literally had to shield my eyes from the screen because I did not want to see what was happening, especially when you miss a putt barely and then it just like rolls a mile away from the hole. And like, yeah, there's no way to, like in the Rory McIlroy game, I think there was a button you press to kind of speed up the shot to get to the end of it. That ain't happening here. You have to watch in agony as you see what you've screwed up and how difficult your next shot is going to be.
Yeah, because you bring up Rory, and that's something I've been asked a lot, and I know I've seen a lot of streamers been asked. You know, I like Rory McIlroy. Will I like this game? And that is a very difficult question to answer because they are games that have a very different purpose.
Yeah.
The Rory McIlroy, the EA franchise for that matter, you know, was about the licenses and about being able to pick it up and power swings and, you know, trying to make it a less than real life but still be real life golf game, whereas the Golf Club 2 is literally trying to replicate you being a hacker at your local course.
Yeah.
So that's a very tough question to answer, to say, you know, if you like Rory McIlroy golf, you might absolutely love Golf Club 2, but definitely don't go into it expecting the same experience, because you're going to be sorely, sorely mistaken.
Now, Rich, do you remember back to the original Golf Club? How did you, one of our discussions at the time related to, you know, the difficulty of the game, and again, it's trying to replicate and be realistic, but we really struggled with learning the game and finding ways to improve. Right? Do you remember your perspective on the game at the time?
I do, and it was that I really enjoyed it. And I got really frustrated with it, but I had such a good time competing with my friends asynchronously, participating in tournaments asynchronously, being flabbergasted by how good some people were in ways that seemed utterly unthinkable to me. There was a friend, a buddy of mine, Mark Foley, who is I do the Dodcast with every couple of weeks, is one of those savants. Like, I would struggle at the height of my powers of that game, which, you know, I say with more than a little irony. You know, I could maybe, you know, be a couple of shots under par on a course, and he would be like 23 shots under. Mm. And I was just like, what? I mean, how is this possible? But anyway, but I don't remember. I remember having conversations with Owen Good. Owen hated it.
Yeah.
And because of what he felt, I believe, is like punishing difficulty. And I don't know. I love golf, like playing the game of golf in real life. I don't get to play real golf that often, but my son and I go play pitch and putt, 18 holes of pitch and putt not every Sunday, but every couple of Sundays. And I do whenever possible play, which is once or twice a year. But I guess just because I can appreciate how difficult the game is, and but I do appreciate how difficult the game is, and I kind of liked the tack that they took. And once I figured a few things out, and the putting green was the biggest thing, once I learned what the distance was, the game completely took a much better turn for me.
Mm-hmm.
And once I learned to putt, then I really had no issues with it. I just loved it. I played it a lot. This game has a long tail, which is why I'm obvious. I mean, the game is on its way to me. It'll be here tomorrow. I bought it at Amazon Prime because you put up something, I think, on your line drive. I'm like, oh, my gosh. A, the game is out. B, I can get it for $9 off.
Yeah.
Exactly. Boom. Yeah. So it's coming physical. But I mean, I work obviously for an independent sports video game maker. I want to support independent sports video games. The more of them there are and the more that get purchased, the better off we all are that love these games. So yeah. It has a long tail. So I'm hoping these issues are taken care of in a relatively expeditious manner, because I have a feeling that this game will have a very long tail, because it's kind of cool just to hop on and play a couple of quick rounds of virtual golf against your friends. Like, that's awesome. Yeah. And that's why I think I'm so excited and hopeful that once these issues are taken care of, that's what everybody will be focusing on.
Yeah, there were tutorials, which I think do a pretty good job of bringing people kind of along into not just the basics, but also offering up some of the more advanced options you have at your disposal, Rich. So I think that's a good job of onboarding there. And then I'm a little more mixed on the practice options, because there's a driving range. Great. You can kind of get your swing down and try to maybe doctor your swing if you're having issues like a lot of us have. And then the chipping practice and the putting practice was just kind of random. It doesn't really give you an opportunity, because the circumstances on different courses, different wind, different all sorts of different situations you're going to face as you're playing. It's not really being replicated there, but at least it's giving you an opportunity to just try things out. Because that was with the first game why I brought up the whole difficulty thing, Rich, for us, was that you learned through failure. Right, that was how you learned in the original golf club, and
yes.
It's still true to a certain extent. It's still true, but they at least give you options to improve. So I think that's a big differentiator between the first game and this game.
Well, and something I really enjoyed are the in round tutorial prompts. So when you play the first time you hit the ball into the trap, you'll have a little prompt pop up at the bottom of the screen. You know, something to the effect of, oh, you know, here, you know, here's a tutorial to go practice your sand shots, or here's some sand shot tips. It's like I said originally, I feel like that is something that was hugely given to them as feedback from the first game, that they've done their best to implement it into this game. HB Studios, they have one of the, I don't know if nicest is the right word, but their forums that they have for these games are immensely, immensely helpful. They get fantastic feedback. I mean, you know, I'm not a homer of the game because it's made in Canada and it's made 5 hours away from my house, but to be like, you know, they do have an awesome community that provided them with so much great feedback. And a lot of that feedback has been the skeleton for Golf Club 2.
Oh yeah.
And it's, again, the tutorials thing was huge. I love that it pops up in the round. I agree with you, Brian. I don't know if the driving range really doesn't do much for me. Like, you might try it once. I don't think it's anything I'm going to go back to probably again. Maybe if I get like a cool new tricked out driver and I just want to go look at it real quick and take like a screenshot. But yeah, I mean, like, again, it's a fantastic game that has a major issue right now that they really need to get sorted out.
So as far as content goes, I mentioned career mode. There's the new societies. Now, I don't know. We'll still get to the servers in a little bit. So we won't touch on that too much here. But I don't know. How much time have you gotten to spend with either one of those things, Chris?
I have browsed around the society's homepage a little bit and the career homepage a little bit. I actually was trying to get more into the societies about 40 minutes before we started recording this. Was unable to do so with any luck. Mm-hmm. You know, again, it's definitely something I want to check out. I do really like the fact that you can be in up to 5 different societies. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I like that is because I could join a larger society, like, you know, like Operation Sports, or I don't know, Brian, how large your society is going to grow, but you know, you could be in a larger society. I could have a smaller society for myself and my stream community. I think it's really cool like that you can kind of, you know, be in different societies. So allowing you to be in up to 5 is really cool. Again, I haven't got a chance to do much of the career stuff, but I am very interested to see what you're going to be able to do there and how it's going to add to the replayability of the game.
So fundamentally with these modes, what you're doing is, so in the career mode, you're setting up events for yourself. You're upgrading as you go. There's a currency system in place. Now, this is not currency you're spending actual money on. It's currency you're earning by playing the game, where you're going to be able to upgrade your clubhouse. You're going to expand your options within career mode the more you go. So you're going to be able to have more events in your career. There's different unlockables. So it's the same thing with societies. You're kind of upgrading your society as your whole society earns. I just wonder fundamentally where you're upgrading like clubhouses and the breadth of a career mode structurally. It's not the same as we've had plenty of golf games, most golf games anywhere, where you're upgrading your character or you're upgrading equipment, right? Mm. You know, like, I wonder, I don't think it draws people in the same way. No, I understand why they do it, right? In the first golf club, the whole idea was everybody basically is the same skill-wise. Every character is the same skill-wise. So when you go out on the course and you play someone else, especially when you're talking about comparing scores online, you know, this person didn't have an advantage because they bought a better club, or this person didn't have an advantage because they stacked their ratings a certain way. But it also means that I can't really shape a character to maybe my skill set. So I can't, you know, if I wanted to make, I'll give up power on the drives to be a better chipper or a better putter, you know, like you can't really do that with anything. So I wonder, like, does that, Rich, to you, does that change the way you look at how you approach the game? Was that a draw to you, the ability to improve your character, or does, you know, pushing all that aside and just going with this kind of stable, everybody has the same capabilities, is that okay to you?
I love that, and because it's different, and because we've all done the building up your character before, and I love that when I go on and play against my friends, we're all just playing based upon our skill, not based upon loot or based upon spending money or based upon even if they put in a lot of time in the game. I'm not saying that every game should be like that or this is how the world should be. I'm saying in this instance, I love that.
What about you, Chris? Do you like the angle they've taken?
Yeah, I agree with Rich. I feel like I'm okay with everybody's character being the same, you know, statistically. Mm-hmm. The other side of the coin is, I can't remember what year it was, but I haven't played an EA golf game since the Tiger Woods days. And I know the last Tiger Woods game I played, during your career mode, what you unlocked along the way was the sponsorship brands. Uh-huh. So you would go along and you would unlock Bridgestone, and that would unlock the Bridgestone items. And see, the thing is, they, as a real life golfer, you know, I wanted those, like the brands were cool, and that was kind of worth the grind. In terms of unlocking things like for your society and your clubhouse, I don't know what the lasting appeal of that is going to be. Like, if 6 months from now, people are still going to be grinding to unlock a new set of bar stools for their society. I just don't know if it has that. I just don't know if it has that same hook as, you know, as a brand or as a club or, you know, it just personally for me, I do like the fact that everybody's on the same playing field in terms of their character. But when it comes to grinding for those unlockables, I just don't think it's something I'm going to really put a lot of work towards.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. Now, career mode and societies, these all sound great conceptually, right? But if the servers are down, here's something you have to know about the golf club too. You can't play them. Pretty much, if the servers are down, the only thing you can do, I believe you can do course creator. You can work on creating course. There are a few courses. I think it's only the golf club, the ones they've specifically designed for the game and approved, that you can play offline. Otherwise, everything is pretty much inaccessible. So what's happened here is, since the game released on Tuesday, HB Studios have really struggled with the servers, and pretty much every time I've tried to play the game, I've been unable to do so. And I know I posted on the first day the game came out, hey, join my society. I still don't have a single person in it, because
yeah,
I think you have to search, and the search never happens, yeah, essentially.
It's not for lack of trying. I'm trying.
Yeah. So this is the struggle we're facing now. They have posted on Twitter, I think at least 6 times last time I checked, messages saying, we're sorry about the servers, we're working on them. So they're communicating at least. And I think people do give it leeway, number one, because they're golf fans and inherently patient people, I think, but also because it's an independent developer, and you give a little leeway, especially since they're communicating, and the hope would be, hey, this game might be doing really well, and as I said in my article on the issue, maybe this is just a challenge they weren't ready to face. Maybe the game is actually doing better than they expected, but regardless, it's something they have to deal with, because there are a lot of people I have seen on Twitter, seen in various forums, who got the game and essentially haven't been able to play yet. So, Rich, you don't have, you haven't played yet because you know, the game's not to you yet. But even if it was to you, you wouldn't have been playing yet. So this is a big concern, especially for a game like this.
Yes.
Now, I do think they have also the benefit of, like you said, Rich, it's a game with a long tail. One of the benefits to not having licensing is that in a month's time, in 3 months' time, in 6 months' time, it doesn't matter if that's when you start playing, right? Because it's not like a season is over. So, but you do have to be concerned with your consumers who are supporting you not being able to obviously get the product that they paid for. So, what have your struggles been like so far, Chris, in this regard?
The servers have been absolute nightmare. We tried to get Millennium and myself and some other people, we tried to play a simultaneous round on Tuesday night. I ended up quitting on the 17th hole just because we had lost connection so many times. Tried to play again last night, lasted about an hour, was able to make it through a round with only, I think, 2 or 3 lost connections. I've been able to, obviously the offline rounds work no problem. Again, like we talked about, you know, when we're talking about societies, I tried to log on to societies right before we started this recording. No dice, career, no dice. I'm glad you mentioned the social media aspect, because up until yesterday, they were very, very active on social media, responding to a lot of users, you know, trying to address as many concerns as they could. And then since then, today they've kind of got a little quieter, which could be a little concerning. Mm-hmm. They did, as we're recording this, they posted 13 hours ago, and they actually just posted 10 minutes ago, essentially the exact same message. We're working on the servers, continue to update you when we get more news. So that can be seen as maybe a bit concerning, considering that we're, you know, almost 3 full days into this now, and there's really, I haven't seen any sign of improvement. You know, everyone has lost their currency that they've had. I know some people have started to get it back. I personally am still sitting at 0. So there is definitely a concern. It has taken away from my enjoyment of how excited I was to play this game. I was very hype. I mean, you just got to go to my Twitter feed for the last month and see how many times I've been counting down the days to the release of this game. And I am disappointed, but it's like you guys have said, this game has such a long lifespan that overall, at, you know, 3 years from now, when we're talking about Golf Club 3, I'm probably not going to remember the server issues from the first week of Golf Club 2 in an extremely negative way.
So, Rich, this has become, with the exception of pretty much the EA sports games, every sports thing that comes out tends to have these server issues. Like, why is that, do you think? Why do they struggle so much with these first days of release, getting the product actually functioning properly?
Well, the short answer is I don't know, because I haven't been a part of them. But it has to be because prediction and capacity must be a very difficult equation, because as we've talked about, it's not just that people can't play some of the game or all of the game if the servers aren't working. Whatever the servers aren't working, there's millions of different parts of that. It could be infrastructure, it could be capacity, it could be net code issues. There's a million things about that. But they're also losing money, not really necessarily the golf club, although potentially losing sales from people who would be on the fence and wanted to see what would happen at launch and haven't bought it because they've heard of it. But obviously the other games, like as we talked about, the show and NBA 2K in particular, and clearly FIFA, right? When they have server problems, it costs them millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars. So considering what's at stake, the fact that so many of these games do have these problems clearly indicates to me that these organizations, for whatever reason, haven't made the proper investment in the ability to support an unpredictable number of users at launch. Now, it's easy to say that, and it's not necessarily easy to be in charge of that, because those kinds of things tend to be very expensive. On the other hand, you've got to try your best to find the right equation of here's how much we're going to spend, and here's how much capacity we're going to have, and here's how much beta testing we're going to do, and here's how much load testing we're going to do, and here's how we're going to scale this thing if it goes off the charts. And what's also interesting, fascinating, and a little terrifying is, you know, at Out of the Park Baseball, as we've mentioned, you know, we're introducing some new stuff later this year and certainly next year, which is going to be online based. And, you know, we have to make sure that the people that we're contracting with to support that we don't have these issues that we're talking about here. So I'm starting to plan for this kind of stuff, which is a very interesting situation too. So there's so much at stake. It's because I've never done it before. I really don't know the reasons why, but those are my hypotheses.
All right, so we will get back to the golf club too, probably next week, Rich. I guess presuming that we're able to play the game before then, if the servers hopefully stabilize, we'll talk more about it. We'll get your thoughts on the game and how things have progressed from this point forward as far as the servers go, and then we'll be able to play around with societies hopefully and things of that nature and talk more in specific about those things. But let's move on now, Rich, and continue our ongoing debate of the last few months regarding sports games on the Nintendo Switch. Okay, we have differing point of views on their potential to succeed there, and I wanted to talk about this latest development because I think it affects the way we would look at sports games on the Nintendo Switch. Now, there's already a sense that there's maybe some inferiority there, but with the Switch, you're getting the portability, so it's making up for some of that as far as the game engine goes and the graphics go. But what we are seeing now is that maybe there's something more behind the scenes that could affect these games, and that's because NBA Playgrounds released on May 9th, so it's been over 7 weeks now this game has been out. Originally, this game released on Nintendo Switch without its online functionality. Essentially, 50% of the game could not be reached on the Nintendo Switch. People bought the game for full price, but it did not have online functionality yet, and they had promised, and this is Saber Interactive, another independent studio, that online would be added within a couple days of release. Now, here we are 7 weeks later. That still hasn't happened. Meanwhile, NBA Playgrounds on PS4, Xbox One, PC has received multiple patches, a bunch of new content, new players, new modes. They've done a lot with the game, but nothing has happened on the Nintendo Switch yet. And so what we found out was, through Facebook, the president of the studio of Saber Interactive made a couple comments on Facebook about what's going on. And what it sounds is, if the holdup is related to patch size, and that Nintendo is extremely restrictive on the size of a patch, and that they have not been able to clear through their first patch, which would bring the online functionality in, because Nintendo is holding it up because of this. And so so the comment specifically about it is, you know, there are certain size requirements you can't exceed in a patch. It took us almost 3 weeks to get an exception to be larger than normal, but it's still it's still hitting snags. And you know, it says he said, in fact, getting this relatively simple patch out has consumed more of their time than making further improvements to the game, and that it's completely out of their hands now. So look, like, the first thing I have to say about this is that it's their fault for releasing the game half finished. Okay, so don't blame Nintendo for that. But if there are these restrictions on patches, which we have come to expect with sports games, this is the norm. You get 5 to 10 patches for a Madden, a FIFA, and NBA 2K. They add features. They're not just fixing little issues, but they add content consistently in these patches. So, Rich, how much does that affect your outlook on sports games if they couldn't match the post-release support on a Nintendo system to what they're actually able to do on the others?
I'm not concerned at all. I think that the Switch is going to continue to evolve, and that these kinds of requirements will get modified and changed as time goes on. We know that there will be a FIFA game, there will be an NBA 2K game, and I guarantee you they will need patches, and I guarantee you those patches will be larger than whatever minimum requirements there are right now that the guys at Playgrounds are talking about. And I say guarantee, clearly I'm talking out of my hat because I don't know, because I don't work on this stuff. But just knowing how this kind of stuff continues to evolve, I'm pretty confident.
Are you saying that because the pull of a company like an EA, that they would be able to basically do what they wanted, and that maybe this small studio doesn't get that same kind of consideration from Nintendo? Which would surprise me, though, because for the lack of games that are on Nintendo right now, to have one there that they maybe aren't able to support the way that they would like supported, that would kind of surprise me, because I would think they'd want to help them as much as possible.
Right. You would think that. But historically, that hasn't proven to be the case. I wouldn't say it's an adversarial situation, but it's not necessarily as supportive as it can be. And that has sometimes not mattered, and sometimes hurt Nintendo's relationship with third-party providers. So I'm not worried at all. So to me, this is not a big deal. I mean, it's a deal, I understand, but it's not a big deal, and it doesn't concern me. I also got Playgrounds on the PS4, not on the Switch, and I frankly haven't played it recently. I want to play against you guys for fun, you know, in friend matchups, figure out how to make that happen. And we will at some point.
Yeah.
I'm not worried. I'm not worried about it at all.
You're never worried, Rich. you're never worried. I think in most cases that I would look at like an NBA 2K, which this year, there's some kind of issue they had on the PS4 where every patch of theirs was 8 gigs. On the Xbox One, I think their patches were about 3.5. And I don't know if that's just they don't compress it the way they could or the way they should. Because usually you see a lot of EA's patches are up well under a gig. So it depends on whatever process they're using. Yeah. But I just have trouble thinking that if an NBA 2K was able to do these patches on PS4 and Xbox One, Rich, and then your version on Nintendo Switch wasn't being supported in the same way, that wouldn't bother you.
Right. I'm not saying it wouldn't bother me, but I'm saying I'm not concerned about it because, and again, this is my personal view, but I'm going to have my FIFA on my Xbox One through EA Access and then the Vault, and that'll be my next gen, best looking, best behaving, best supported version, and then I'll have the version on the Switch where I'm going to be playing as Everton for 4 or 5 seasons, And I won't really care so much about that kind of stuff. I'm not saying it's the right thing to do business-wise or the wrong thing. I'm not saying everyone should accept that. I'm just telling you I'm not going to complain about something falsely. There's no reason to do that. That's all.
We should, Rich. We like to complain about things. When has that ever stopped us, Rich?
There's plenty that we legitimately can complain about. Yes. There's no doubt about
Oh,
that.
Yes.
Yes. Chris, you have thoughts on this? I'm just curious because I'm not sure how many people are. There are a lot of people on Twitter who are facing this situation who have the Switch version of the game and can't even play online yet. And I'm just curious how this changes maybe your perception of what's going on there.
Well, I'm going to share Rich's overall sentiment that I'm not worried and it doesn't really concern me yet. I don't think one instance of this shows any kind of trend, but I am fully on record since last November that I personally believe that the third party support is what is going to make or break the Switch in the long run. Mm. I personally have not bought a Switch yet. I am probably to the point where I would buy one now after having seen, its first, period of existence and what's coming up and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But I've said many, many times on Twitter, in YouTube videos, I have not had a very good relationship with Nintendo over the last 8 months. I have said some very scathing things about the company, what they did with the NES Classic.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the, pizzazz that they surrounded with the Switch when they weren't really telling anybody anything. But I firmly believe that in order for this system to be successful, the third-party support and the relationship between Nintendo and the companies that are going to make games has to be there. You're going to get a Mario game. You're going to get, you already got the Zelda game. We have, Metroid is coming. All the big titles. We're going to get a Donkey Kong game eventually. They're all going to be there. People who are fans of Nintendo franchises are going to buy the Switch, and they probably already have. But for someone like me, who I have not bought a Nintendo product since the Wii, which is only two generations ago for Nintendo, but I never considered buying a Wii U because I just didn't feel it supported the third-party games that I enjoy. Again, not worried yet. This is one instance. And it's like you said, Brian, NBA Playgrounds could have very well launched a fully functional game right off the bat, and this probably would not have been an issue.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to write it off. But again, if this is something that becomes a trend where, Nintendo is going to push back constantly, again, let's see them try that with EA and see how it goes. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think it would go well for Nintendo if they are going to try to push that on EA, a much larger company.
Yeah. We'll see what goes on with that. But I just noticed this week, ever since that news kind of came out, they haven't said anything on Twitter in like 5 or 6 days. We don't really know anything more that's going on with NBA Playgrounds on Switch. Just a little bit of trepidation then as far as what does this mean for the future. It may not mean anything if they adjust, if they're more flexible, or if those bigger companies end up having the pull to get what they want in the end. It's just, we do have a history of Nintendo not exactly being accommodating to third parties. So if that continues, then that's something we have to monitor.
What makes it interesting is the Switch is not something we've ever really seen before. And that's kind of where I think the people who are the eternal optimists about this are like continuing to be optimists, because it's like it's an ever evolving system. Every day there's something new and you look at something a different way. I still don't fully think Nintendo knows what they have on their hands with this system. I think that they're constantly having meetings and trying to plot out the evolution of this system. And this may be something, this NBA Playgrounds issue, we may never see this again. They may have already said, okay, here's what we're going to do handling this going forward. We're going to do this. And we may never, ever talk about a patch size issue on the Switch again. Or we could talk about it each and every Thursday night.
Let's hope not. I really wouldn't look forward to that. All right. So finally, the last topic I wanted to get to in this episode, it's relates to this new trend of EA, 2K, Microsoft. They're putting out games where they're charging you more for the special edition and then releasing that 3 or more days earlier than the regular edition. So you see that this year with Madden, FIFA, NHL, WWE, Forza, NBA 2K, not exactly the same situation since they give you the game early just for pre-ordering. You don't have to get their more expensive version of the game to do that. But they've had that kind of tiered system in place for a couple years now. So this to me, it depends on how you look at it. I'm curious to hear from you guys how you look at it. Because from what I hear from people on Twitter who have contacted me about this is that they feel like it's not buy the special edition of the game, get it early. It's buy the regular edition of the game, the standard $60 edition, and be punished by having to wait extra days to get it. And I think there's some validity to that with a few of these games, because what happened with EA, what EA has done here is now the games that typically come out on Tuesdays, like Madden, the last Tuesday in August is just for their special edition that's going to cost you, I don't remember, is it $80 this year? Something along those lines. And then the regular release is pushed back to Friday. So it's not like NBA 2Ks where they bumped you up from Tuesday to Friday, but they're bumping people back. If that makes any sense, I may have confused everybody who's listening out there. Essentially, EA and WWE and all these games, with the exception of NBA 2K18, have their in their typical release slot is the more expensive version of the game, and then a few days later is the lower and the standard version of the game. So, anyways, point being, there's a lot of people out there, and I see validity in this, who think they're punishing those who don't pay the extra money for what is essentially Ultimate Team content or DLC-type content that you get in these games, because they're just buying the normal version of the game, and now, in order to get the game on the day it should be out, you have to pay extra. Rich, do you agree with that at all, or are you going to tell me that's not true? Because you love to tell me things that I say are not true.
Well, there's a number of ways to look at it, right? One way that I look at it, and this is has nothing to do with what I do or I don't do business-wise, is that no one is ever forcing you to buy a particular version of a game at any point.
Well, they're pressuring you. They're not forcing you. They're pressuring you.
Right. Now, and yes, so if you're paying $60 for any console game, you're doing it wrong, as we have talked about. Amazon Prime, Best Buy, mm-hmm. these places have great ways for you to get games for $8 to $12 off.
Even EA Access gives you 10% off.
And that's if you want to be the earliest of the early adopters. Mm-hmm. Right. So if you're a big fan of a game and you're an early adopter, you know, it's I can't say that I think it's a great thing that the publishers do it, because I don't. But again, that's from me as a consumer's perspective, because I don't ever get those versions of those games.
Yeah.
This stuff doesn't matter enough to me to do it. If conversely, I'm like so many people that I do know, and they are big into the Ultimate Team versions, Diamond Dynasties, whatever, they feel much more like, hey, look, if I want to be in on day one and stream this stuff and have fun and play the way that I want to when the game is out, they almost feel like, well, I almost have no choice. So I see that too. To me, again, it all comes down to, it's not yes or no, it's what kind of a player are you? If you're someone like me, it doesn't matter. If you're all in on the Ultimate Team, which is heavily weighed around us, then it is a big deal. One way to say, yeah, it's a choice. Consumers have choices. and having more choices is good. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely the sentiment of it's hard sometimes not to be cynical at how different games are dated and released and what you get based upon what you spend for all those modes. It's tough to get it right either way. And every year it changes and evolves because it's not an exact science. It's interesting to watch unfold, but again, for me personally, it's a non-issue because I'm going to get the regular version of it on the PS4 and obviously play through EA Access on the Xbox One.
Yeah, Chris, I know you are a big Ultimate Team type player, right? So you probably get the special editions regardless. Is that true?
For most games, surprisingly, I don't play a lot of Mutt. Is actually the one game I really don't enjoy Mutt for reasons that I won't get into. But like for MLB, NHL, I usually buy the special edition. MLB, The Show as well. I actually bought the FIFA special edition this year also. So for me, it's a two-sided thing. The content creator slash live streamer side of me is like, I absolutely have to pick it up as early as I can.
Oh, you have to.
Because if you don't, you are going to miss out on that release hype bump that you get on Twitch or on YouTube. And it's real. People try to tell you that release bump is not real. It is definitely real. You have to get it as soon as you can, because you want to be out there when not a lot of people have it, because then there's less places for people to go to watch the stream. So you know, that helps you as a creator because you're making more ad revenue. If you're a partnered streamer, you know, you're getting more subs, you're getting more tips. So that side of me is like, yeah, like get me this game as early as I can. The 35-year-old father of two married who works a job and umpires baseball side of me is like, I don't care. Because if, like, honestly, like the chances that if a game comes out on a Tuesday that I'm going to get to play the game on a Tuesday is very little. The golf club is one thing, right? Where you can pick it up, you can play around, you're in and out 45 minutes, you're done.
You don't even have to play around. You can play a hole and then just drop out. It saves it for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like, you know, I remember when MLB The Show came out, I didn't work that day. I was streaming it at 8 a.m. to the biggest audience I'd ever had. And, you know, have enjoyed that for the first week. But like for me, my personal side, I honestly, it doesn't affect me. So I have to decide, you know, what is more important, the status of my content creation or just being like, you know what, I'll pick it up on Friday and I guarantee you I'm going to have those games on Tuesday. I'm just saying, I hope my wife's not listening right now, but but it's this is something that I don't think anybody who has the bare basics of business acumen should not understand, that this is a smart move for these companies to do this. Obviously special editions of games have been a thing now for some time, at higher price points with more in-game things. This is just the next evolution of that. And again, if you have that business sense, you can see it makes sense for them to do this because there is so much content creation, there is so much live streaming of their product now that this is like, hey, this is another perk that you can obviously tell is geared towards that section of the community.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, like for as far as casual gamers go, those who maybe wouldn't pay the extra money off the bat, who don't anticipate spending money in an Ultimate Team, and because essentially what they've been before we got this opportunity to have the game's earlier thing going, basically it was, it makes sense to buy the special edition if you're going to play the Ultimate Team modes, because they're giving you more value out of that than if you're going to spend $20 in those Ultimate Team modes, then you're going to get way more out of that $20 from buying the special edition versus just spending it in the game. So it made sense in that way, but I just wonder, it's not the same. Remember the days when people would be lined up outside video game stores when Madden would have a big launch event in New York City, and everybody was super excited to everybody be on at midnight. You got to be right with the game. It's not that way anymore, though, is it, Rich? Is it not? There's no, like, other than, like you were saying, Chris, as far as the streaming and stuff, there's not a sense that you have to be on immediately, really, to get the full effect of these brand new games.
Well, you said it, right? It's changed. Instead of being online at the store, it's online on Twitch. And whenever the first sort of authorized users are able to start live streaming it, that's now become the way that those kind of things happen. And obviously with digital delivery, a lot of people are like, well, hey, let me get this sucker preloaded and hit the button at midnight, right? So all of those things are causing the consistent and never-ending cycle of change that video games are going through right now. And it's fascinating to be a part of, but what's really interesting to me is how ingrained this has become so quickly, right? Like this is changed within 3 years so much, and it's amazing, and it's going to continue to evolve in ways that we can somewhat predict, but also in ways that we cannot predict, because 3 years is an eon in technology. I mean, 2 years ago nobody was talking about Discord, right? Now everyone's got their own Discord channel. And that's changing a whole lot of things very quickly. So that's the other part of it that I just find so interesting is when these games launch, how the collective community comes together, what different modes. I mean, there's the hugely proud franchise, you know, movement, but it still is dwarfed by the Ultimate Team live streaming, and just because of the natures of it. It's just the whole thing is just so interesting and fascinating to watch, because it's so different and nobody knows the blueprint. Nobody knows the blueprint.
Yeah. And I think, that last point is the key, is that it's an ever evolving, you know, situation. I mean, I can remember, you know, when MLB The Show in the lead up to that, you know, the people who were, you know, the content creators who were given pre-release codes to stream the game, you know, they all kind of coordinated as a group and they picked certain times and they all would bounce from stream to stream. And it was like the weirdest pseudo community, ridiculous thing. But the other side of the coin is that it's easy to see, like Brian mentioned with the casual people, how this is like EA drawing a line in the sand in front of you and saying, we're going to start catering our bonuses more and more towards the people that are, you know, giving us greater revenue.
It definitely looks that way.
And it's easy to see why people are upset at this, because they are pointing the person who picks up Madden base version just so he can play his poor old New York Jets franchise and never win the Super Bowl in 6 years and then move them to Toronto and win it the first 3 years he's there. How, when they look at you and they say, listen, we are going to continue to give benefits to the Ultimate Teamers because that's where we're literally making our millions, you definitely can see why these people are upset.
Okay. Well, you know what? I think that'll do it for this episode. Thank you, Rich Grisham, Chris Jardine, Snaggle J. You are often on Twitch. You're on Twitter. Tell us where we can find you.
Everywhere, at Snaggle J. Twitch.tv/Snaggle J. Twitter.com, Snaggle J. YouTube, Snaggle J. Instagram. It's all. We got the branding. Listen, I went to the That Sports Gamer School of Social Media branding. So yeah. Everything's lined up. Snaggle J everywhere.
The That Sports Gamer influence is all over the place.
It sure is.
From Rich Grisham to Snaggle J to Pasta Padre. So thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode. We will be back next week with another show for you. Take care. Till then.